Welcome to the supplementary podcast for your family communication textbook, Communication in Family Contexts, Applying Theories and Processes to Family Relationships. In this series of podcasts, your textbook authors interview family communication scholars, discussing their research and how it contributes to our overall understanding of family communication. The authors hope that hearing the voices and the stories of scholars you're reading about will bring the material to life and enhance your learning.
Today we have your textbook authors, Elizabeth Dorrance Hall and
Christina Sharp,
to talk to you about the family distancing process, because this is actually the area that we do most of our research in. So we wanted to take the time to talk a little bit more about how we define family distancing, especially marginalization and estrangement, and then talk a little bit about what we know about those two areas. So we'll start with the definition of marginalization. So I define marginalization as feeling different from your family, maybe disapproved of and excluded. Oftentimes this is called the black sheep of the family. Maybe you're familiar with that term. Maybe you have a black sheep in your family, or maybe you are the black sheep of the family.
What interested you in family member marginalization?
So I got interested in this topic because I noticed a little bit of this happening in my own family. So I wanted to look into a new topic that was actually important to me and something that was affecting my life. And I noticed in my own family a little bit of this kind of a process and how it affected everyone. So you guys already learned about family systems theory, and having one black sheep in the family really affects all of the members. So I saw my mom negotiating between the siblings and trying to smooth things over, and the siblings constantly talking about what was going on with a certain family member and things like that. So I really saw it influencing the day-to-day interactions in my own family and wanted to learn more about it, and very quickly found that there was very little research out there about marginalization and estrangement. We're fortunate now that that's changing, that more and more people are looking into this, and that Christina and I have both done quite a bit of work in this area. So I'm wondering, Christina, how do you define estrangement and how is it different?
So estrangement is when one family member, or at least one family member, voluntarily and intentionally distances themselves from another family member because of an ongoing negative relationship. Typically, estrangement is more severe than family member marginalization, where people in the marginalization process might want to reconcile with their families or feel more included. Typically, people in the estrangement process really want to distance themselves and maintain that distance.
Why do you think this is such a new area of research?
For a long time, family researchers in a variety of fields have considered families as a non-voluntary relationship, or a relationship where people feel like they have no viable choice but to maintain it. More recently, you and I have really been challenging that idea that family members have to stick together or have to treat each other well. And so I think as we rethink what a family is and rethink the realities that some people in some families really behave in really distressing ways, that you don't always have to stay with your family, especially if you're in an abusive relationship.
Right. That's a great answer. I'm excited to see more and more of this research coming out. And how exactly do people tend to distance themselves when they're in the process of estrangement?
So I really think of estrangement as having eight characteristics. The first being about communication. So we're communication scholars. I think this is fundamentally a part of the estrangement process. So not only how much we talk to our family members, but also the quality in which we're talking to them. So a person might stop how much they're communicating with their family, reduce that, or they might just not talk about anything meaningful anymore. So I might limit my conversation to small talk, instead of talking about the meaningful things that are happening in my life. Emotion also plays a big role in the estrangement process. So I might not feel much when I think about my family member. Like, instead of a closer relationship where I feel a lot of emotion, I might not feel any at all, and I also might change the valence of the emotion I experience. So I might feel much more negatively towards a family member than positively. Another common way people distance themselves is by physically moving away. A lot of people who I've talked to moved across the country and made sure their family couldn't find them. In addition, how much a person wants to be in their family matters. So do I want to reconcile? Do I even want to be a part of this family? And then the extent to which people are engaging in the roles that one might expect. So we might think that a parent should take care of children, clothe them, feed them. Later in life, we might expect that a child might visit their parent if they're sick. So the extent to which people stop engaging in behaviors that you might expect is a marker of estrangement. And then finally, the extent to which people engage in legal action against their family. So sometimes this looked like changing a last name so you didn't share it with a family member, or it might even be writing someone out of a will or changing your durable power of attorney. So those are kind of the 8 characteristics that make up what estrangement is. And so what about the dimensions of marginalization? What is that looking like?
Yeah, so there are 3 primary dimensions of marginalization, and they are difference, disapproval, and exclusion. So I'd love to talk about each of those a little bit. So difference really looks like othering, so making that one family member feel like they're an other and kind of an outgroup member. So actually, marginalized family members describe this as feeling insignificant, maybe unique, so it doesn't always have to be negative, they could be different in a good way. Not conforming, a stranger in their own family, they might feel misunderstood. Disapproval is the next dimension, and in this way, families tend to shame that other member, so they might, family members describe themselves as feeling invisible or hidden, devalued, maybe inferior. There's a lot of guilt and doubt surrounding disapproval. The third dimension is exclusion, so they might feel separate, they might feel like an outsider, they might feel lost or isolated. And we found that not all marginalized family members feel that they are all 3 dimensions at the very highest end of the spectrum. So there could be some variance. So you might feel different from your family, but not disapproved or excluded. Or you might feel really disapproved of and be excluded, but not feel all that different. So that might be more confusing because you're not sure why they're excluding you. So there's some variety there. Just to give you a couple more examples here, so somebody who's feeling different might say that they've become a different kind of person over time and that they no longer make connections with their siblings or their parents the way they used to. So I've had marginalized family members tell me like they've gone on and gotten higher education degrees and suddenly they kind of speak a different language than the rest of their family, and so they have that disconnect and they feel different. In terms of disapproval, they might feel like their acceptance is conditional on doing what their parents want or their expectations that their parents have for them. And if they don't meet them, then they're disapproved of. And then exclusion, they may feel abandoned. So like estrangement, they may feel abandoned. They may have gone through some of this kind of abuse. But they don't feel that the family takes them in the same way they take in the other members. So they may not be invited to things, or they may just be out of the loop in terms of information. I will also say that there are events that marginalized family members experience as highly marginalizing that can also make them feel included, which is very difficult to reconcile. For example, you might get invited to a wedding and feel really included because you're going to the wedding, the family wants you there, but then at the wedding, the type of communication that's going on, pictures they're taking, something like that might really make you feel excluded at the exact same event. So it can be really difficult. So in estrangement, maybe you've distanced yourself and you're not even at the wedding. When you're marginalized, you might be at that wedding and then experiencing all these negative emotions and this negative communication.
One other thing I think that just reminded me of is that what we know about estrangement is almost exclusively about parents and children, where I think that you've done a really nice job of extending that into other family relationships.
Yeah, I found that siblings can be instruments of marginalization, or they can be allies, which is a really important role siblings can play. So they may, you know, also understand your parents and how, you know, how they do things and why they're so controlling and things like that. So they can really be in that ally role, or they can be part of the family that's marginalizing you. So
why are some of the reasons people feel marginalized?
Yeah, so they report a bunch of different reasons, actually. So some people feel like they've always been different. You know, like ever since I was little, I was different, and this is just how it is, and they've always kind of marginalized me. Other people can point to something more specific. So when I left the family religion, or when I came out as gay, that's when this all started. So I'll just go through a couple of reasons with you now. So gender roles and appearance is one. So not conforming to the gender roles that are prescribed by your parents or by society, which marks you as different. Another one, a big one, is values and beliefs. So changing, you know, family religion, or leaving the religion, maybe having different political values and beliefs than your parents. Although lots of people have different values than their parents, this is kind of an extreme version. Caretaking is another one. So there's a term for this called parentification. Basically, it means too much responsibility being put on maybe the oldest child, and then it kind of causes those feelings of marginalization later. Having an undesirable partner, so marrying someone your family doesn't like, or even coming out as gay, like I mentioned. And then parental mental health. I know this is something that we see in estrangement research as well, that parents with mental health issues sometimes, you know, abuse their children or neglect their children. Certainly not always, but I've also had marginalized family members talk about, you know, my mom had a breakdown when I was a teenager, and sometimes it's tied to that parentification. Then I had to take care of the family, and things were never the same. And so that's another one, as well as the parent mental health.
I think that's really interesting, because those are pretty different reasons than why people are reporting that they're estranged. So an estrangement, more likely they're talking about some sort of serious abuse. So some sort of psychological, physical, sexual abuse, some sort of substance abuse that's happening in their family, or the one that I think we share in common is parental mental health issues.
Yeah, that's interesting. So yeah, you can kind of see that those reasons maybe lead to different levels of severity in family distancing. What about practical implications of all of this? This is fascinating, of course, but what can we actually do with this information?
I think one thing that came out of my research is what some things that social network members might be able to do, and in this case, it's what social network members maybe shouldn't do, is this idea of reconciliation. So I think, unlike marginalization, where people are hoping to reconcile, in estrangement, that's not really the case. And so a lot of my participants discussed not wanting to reconcile and the unwanted pressure when people tried to reconcile them. So often a lot of people didn't know exactly why they sought distance in the first place, and they didn't want to talk about it. So this idea that all families should be together was really difficult for my participants. And unlike a romantic relationship, if someone said, I'm in an abusive relationship, people would say, oh, don't go back. Like, we'd really support them in trying to stay away. That's not what we're seeing in families. A lot of people, regardless of why they are seeking distance, somehow feel that family should be together. We certainly have phrases about this in our culture. We talk about blood is thicker than water. When ironically, this phrase actually means the opposite. It's an old phrase that has to do with the blood people shed in battle is thicker than the water people share in the womb. It has to do with this idea that those who you're willing to give your life for are family, and it doesn't have to do with your biological ties, even though we think about it in the exact opposite way today. So I think one practical application is to really understand why someone has sought distance and feel okay supporting them, and that could be a really healthy solution to an unhealthy environment. What about you? Are there some practical applications in thinking about supporting people who are marginalized?
Yeah, so I've done some work on the resilience strategies that marginalized people use to kind of cope with their status in their family. And resilience just means being able to bounce back and move forward through life's challenges. So, you know, kind of coping, basically. And we find that people cope in a lot of different ways, but one of the ways is by connecting to something we call voluntary or adoptive kin. So if you don't have the family relationships that are making you happy and supporting you in all the ways that you need, then you'll often reach out to other people that can fill those functions for you or do those kinds of supportive behaviors for you. So helping people connect to others is one way that you can be supportive. And just like Christina just said, not pushing them back into their families. That's not the answer. You need to let people make that decision on their own. Sometimes that is what needs to happen and will happen eventually, but oftentimes it's not the best answer. So connecting them and being that person for them. So if you know that somebody's having those kind of difficult, challenging family relationships, maybe inviting them to your Thanksgiving or to your 4th of July barbecue or whatever it is a really big way that we can help. Also helping people tell their story. So we know that being able to kind of reframe what's happened to you and think about the positives without ignoring the negatives. So saying, yeah, this has happened to me and it's, you know, not ideal, but here are the ways that I've grown from it, things like that. So allowing people to tell their story if they're open to it, and maybe even talking to them about thinking about kind of what are the good things that have come of this, even if overall it's a negative experience. What do you think about future research in this area? What do you think needs to be done next?
Well, in the estrangement research, I'm really excited about a project I'm working on right now that has to do with getting the experiences of other people in the family. So just like you mentioned with marginalization, estrangement isn't something that just happens between two people, right? So certainly if a parent and child are somewhere in the estrangement process, other people in the family certainly have to negotiate that as well. So I'm in the process of talking to different members of the immediate family about how they're experiencing estrangement. I'm also really excited about looking at estrangement in a more quantitative way. So most of the times we've been looking at experiences and identities and meaning making, but also looking at how estrangement might be related to some negative outcomes. So we have anecdotal evidence that this is really distressing, certainly impacting people's lives in a negative way, sometimes even a positive way, but how is this distancing process influencing people's mental health, the somatic symptoms they may be experiencing, and their overall physiological health? What about you? Where is marginalization research going?
I think the next step, probably for both of us, definitely getting information from multiple family members, that's huge. But also looking at these experiences longitudinally. So far we've been asking people to recall their estrangement or their marginalization experiences, which is useful. It's a great place to start. But being able to actually capture the process in process, right? So as it's happening, so we can see kind of how things unfold in real time and how things longitudinally kind of affect each other. So understanding all of those same variables you were just talking about, but looking at it on the longitudinal scale, I think will be really important next step.
I think too, one of the things that is important, I think, for all of us to remember is that we can't capture these distancing processes dyadically, or it's much harder to, especially with estrangement, right, where people are really concerned about their safety, and they're really often afraid of another family member, is that we don't know the whole story, right? So we're only talking to one person. I think that creates opportunities to vilify a particular position when we only are talking to either the children or the parents or the siblings, and we're not really able to get a sense of what's happening from both people's perspectives. So we know from the estrangement literature that parents have a much harder time making sense of the estrangement. They don't know why it's happened, where adult children almost always know why it's happened, especially because they're the ones typically initiating the distance. So parents are left very confused. None of them would talk about being abusive. So I think it's also important to remember that whenever you read the distancing research, we're only hearing one side of the story, which is really important, but it's still only one side.
Yeah, great point. And thank you so much. And this has been a lot of fun. We're glad we got to come and chat and give you another kind of insight into what we know about family distancing. And we hope you enjoyed the chapter.
And there you have it. Be sure to check out the corresponding chapter on this subject and see the discussion questions that go with this podcast in the textbook.